killers, murderers, decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, 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 and welcome back to Decoding the Crime Verse. I am Danny, and I'm once again joined with... Yeah, he decided to come back. He decided to go missing, and then he realized he missed me, so he came back. He missed us, so he came back.
Okay.
No, you admit it. Admit it. You... I refuse to accept this nonsense. And then he's not going to say anything. Do you see what I deal with? Guys, feel sorry for me. He still doesn't say anything. It's fine. It's fine. It's like speaking to a ghost. I'm not moving on until you reply. So
the show is... not about me, but okay.
Wow. But we are doing the Hammersmith ghost murder. I don't know how a ghost can kill anyone. Or, yeah. I mean, this feels like Scooby-Doo. I was obsessed with Scooby-Doo as a kid. Yeah. I would watch it all the time. I used to watch all the movies, the TV show. And I still will watch it. If it comes on TV, I'll watch Scooby-Doo 110%. So, it's not often that legal history and ghost stories go hand in hand. But that's exactly what happened with the Hammersmith ghost case of 1804. A haunting chapter in British case law. Amidst the gloomy 19th century London, a wave of terror swept through Hammersmith as reports of a spirit... gripped the community. With terror turned into hysteria, an innocent man was murdered in a case of mistaken identity, leaving the British courts in a bit of a conundrum. Can a man be found guilty of trying to kill a ghost? No, I'm asking you. Your opinion. Can he be guilty of trying to kill a ghost?
If he's insane, yes.
If he's insane. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is what today's whole story was about. So, towards the end of 1803, the people of Hammersmith in West London began claiming they had been seen or even attacked by this ghostly apparition. Basically, a man running around under a sheet. You know, in those, like, you know, Halloween vibes where the kids, like, cut holes out. That's what I picture in my head.
Yeah.
When I think of this guy. The ghost was said to be a man who had killed himself the year before and had been buried in the Hammersmith's churchyard. But because he had killed himself, he couldn't find peace. Because at that time, it was a belief that suicide victims were condemned to hell, mortal hell. And so they couldn't, like... leave Earth. That was the belief in 1903 in London. Their bodies were not allowed to be buried in consecrated ground, as this would stop their souls from being at rest. As such, the locals believed they were being haunted because the suicide victim had been buried where he shouldn't have been. So basically a whole bunch of Scooby-Doo. Reports of what the ghost looked like differed somewhat. Some witnesses claimed the ghost was very tall and dressed in white robes. Others said he wore a calfskin clothes and had horns and large glass-like eyes. It's amazing how fiction like intertwines with reality when people are scared. I mean, have you ever been in a dark room and you hear something? Or, you know, this is a perfect example. Have you ever had this thing where there's a jacket on your room, like hanging on a cupboard or whatever, and then you think it's someone in the middle of the night when you wake up, but it's just a jacket? These were incredibly superstitious times, and a ghost story quickly circulated. The 1800s, people were very, very much into myths and legend, and very, like, that's a time where they really would have believed if you stepped on a crack, you'd break your mother's back type of vibes. They were very cautious of that type of stuff. People began increasingly paranoid as reports of people being attacked by this entity began to spread. In particular, two women, one elderly and one pregnant, were said to have been attacked while walking past the local church. Supposedly, it was so traumatic, they both died from shock. I'm sorry, how scary is this man under a sheet that you die? Okay, I suppose if you're old, maybe that is an excuse, maybe shame.
Yeah.
She had heart failure. Okay, and I suppose you're also pregnant. Okay, don't scare people who are pregnant, please. We don't need... Suppose the shock. I don't know. I don't know the medical reasons behind that. But another report of an attack came from a brewer's son named Thomas Groom, who claimed he had been attacked while walking through the churchyard at night, saying something had pounced from behind a tombstone and grabbed him by the throat. It only ceased its attack when Groom's companion noticed something was wrong with his friend. Okay, I won't lie. I wouldn't be walking in a graveyard at night. Not that I believe in ghosts roaming, but I really think it's a bit freaky.
Yeah.
It's not my vibe. Like, not at all. The final ghost sighting before tragedy struck occurred on the 29th of December 1803, when a night watchman named William Gridler spotted the ghost along Beaver Lane. He gave chase, but the ghost managed to escape by throwing off its white sheet and disappearing. Do you understand how this is already... How can you believe this is a ghost? How can a ghost throw its clothes off if it's a ghost? Do you get what I'm saying?
Well, technically, these are not... These are like ghosts that used to be people that died.
No, but listen. If you're a ghost, are your clothes not also ghost clothes?
Yes, you take off your ghost clothes.
So wouldn't they disappear when they landed on the floor? Surely the person wouldn't be able to pick them up. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you see, they are ghost clothes. So the ghost should be able to pick up their own clothes.
Yeah, but I'm saying, okay, yes, but then how was the person, the actual person, able to pick them up? Do you understand?
Superpower.
Wow. No. It's just absolute hogwash. That's what it is. This sighting led some citizens to setting up armed patrols in the area in the hopes of catching the ghost. Sadly, this mounting hysteria led to tragedy. On the night of the 3rd of January, 1804, Gridler ran into one of these armed citizens on the corner of Beaver Lane. It was 29-year-old excise officer and wannabe ghost hunter Francis Smith. Smith was carrying a shotgun and told the watchman he'd been looking for the ghost. The two arranged to meet up at 11 p.m. when Gridler had called the hour to catch the ghost together. Basically Ghostbusters in 1804. Right? At just after 11 p.m., Smith ran into Thomas Millwood, who was a bricklayer who was heading home after paying a visit to his parents and sister. During this time, bricklayers wore all white clothing. Okay, you are working with cement. Why are you wearing white clothing is my first question. Does that not make you dirty with all the dust?
Yeah, definitely.
That, like, makes no sense to me, but anyway. And he was wearing linen trousers and... which were entirely white, washed and clean, as well as a waistcoat of flannel, apparently new, very white, and an apron. And basically, he was dressed in all white, and he looked like a ghost, right? And when Smith saw Millwood, he mistook Millwood for this ghost that he was trying to catch.
Yeah.
And he basically like, who are you? Who are you? Don't come any closer. I'll shoot. But Millwood didn't listen. And guess what? Francis shot Millwood in the head.
Hmm.
Next thing, a body collapsed. And Smith was standing over a dead body, an actual dead body, a human dead body, not a ghost. And upon hearing gunfire, several neighbors ran out to see what the commotion was all about. And they found agitated Smith, who they told to go home and wait for the police. Before he could do so, however, the constable arrived and arrested him. Millwood's lifeless body was then carried to a nearby inn where surgeon Mr. Flower examined the body. Mr. Flower found that the cause of death was in fact the gunshot, which basically penetrated through his neck and injured his spinal marrow. That is going to be one hell of a painful way to go, I'm just saying. Anyway, so Smith was now trialed for willful murder, and his trial did not go well for him. It began with Millwood's tearful widow telling the court how she had warned her husband to cover up his white clothes because he had been mistaken for the ghost in the past, and she feared for his safety. And Millwood's sister gave a testimony where she recalled how even though Smith had warned her brother first, telling him to stop, he had fired almost immediately. The chief judge, Lord Barron, then reminded the jury that premeditation was not needed for a guilty verdict, just the intent to kill, which he did intend to kill. If you're shooting a gun at someone, you are kind of intending to kill them.
Or maybe you're just trying to graze their skin.
And you hit them in the neck.
Yeah.
Explain.
I don't know. Just give them something to remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A shooting in the neck is something I'll remember if I live, which he didn't. Anyway.
The guy who shot was not professional.
Okay, I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
The judge then pointed out Millwood had never attacked Smith and was never even given the chance to provoke Smith. Furthermore, Smith had made no attempt to catch the ghost and had chosen to shoot him on sight. Here's another thing. If you believe it's a ghost, what is a gun going to do? So why are you shooting a gun at it? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because it's not like the gun's going to do anything. Or did he believe that the bullet wouldn't have any effect because it was a ghost and it was going to go right through him? That could also be it. Yeah. I don't know. And so as such, he felt that the killing should not be deemed either an act of self-defense or an accidental shooting. Millwood's defense brought in a number of declarations of Smith's good character, but the judge was having none of it. He told the jury that good character had nothing to do with this case. Smith had shot Millwood pure and simple. He emphasized that Millwood had done nothing wrong and that even if he had been pretending to be a ghost, that would not have been a reason to shoot him. After an hour's consideration, the jury came back with a verdict of manslaughter, where the judge told them no, it was either murder or acquittal, and told them to go back and decide again. They then returned with a guilty verdict, and Smith was sentenced to hanging. After an appeal to the king, this was commuted to a year's hard labor. The crux of this case came down to whether or not Smith could have been held liable for his actions, even if they were the result of a mistaken belief. At the time, the judge had held the reason Smith couldn't plead self-defense was that he'd never been in any danger. He had been mistaken and had taken a man's life and should pay the penalty. But this didn't sit right with everyone, including the king, who commuted the original sentence. Smith had made a serious mistake, but it wasn't really fair not to take it into consideration. It took 180 years for England's legal system to decide. Imagine you caused the legal system 180 years worth of headaches. That's a achievement and a half, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
A Court of Appeals decision in 1984 decided that when it comes to self-defense, whether or not the accused was mistaken or not, should be taken into consideration at the trial. The trial's judge, Lord Chief Justice Lane, stated that even if the mistake was an unreasonable one, if the accused believed it at the time, then they should be allowed to rely on it in court.
Yeah.
So, who was the actual ghost? Because that's the only question left. Who was this person running around in the sheet? Well, we do have an answer. Fortunately. He was an elderly shoemaker named John Graham. And was a prankster. And apparently, he was angry because his apprentices had been telling his grandchildren ghost stories. And as a result, his grandchildren weren't sleeping at night. So he decided to prank his apprentices by dressing up as ghosts.
Wow.
And running around the town. So, yes. I think it's very interesting. I mean, yes, he mistook the person for the ghost. But, I mean, I still, that didn't give him any right to shoot the person and kill him. And so, I do think jail time was a reasonable sentence. I don't think hanging was a reasonable sentence. I think jail time. But it does beg the question, how far can we take the claim of self-defense?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people often claim self-defense in trying to get away with what they've done.
Yeah.
When actually the person didn't mean them any harm. And so I think it does bring in a very important question, is how far can we take the argument of self-defense into account when trying cases? But yeah, that is the Hammersmith ghost murder. When I first heard the title, I thought it was someone dressing up as a ghost killing people. I didn't know it was the actual ghost getting murdered himself. What a plot twist.
Mm-hmm.
What a plot twist. But that is all for this week. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No.
No, he does not. And we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.